This is Recruiting Daily's Recruiting Live Podcast, where we look at the strategies behind the world's best talent acquisition teams. We talk recruiting, sourcing, and talent acquisition. Each week, we take one overcomplicated topic and break it down so that your three-year-old can understand it. Make sense? Are you ready to take your game to the next level? You're at the right spot. You're now entering the mind of a hustler. Here's your host, William Tincup.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is William Tincup, and you're listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast. Today we have John on from Business Solver, and we'll be talking about their report that they do. It's Business Solver's 2021 trends and 2022 predictions. I'm excited to learn on both sides, and I know y'all are going to be excited to learn as well. So we're just going to jump right into it. John, why don't you do us a favor, the audience a favor, and introduce yourself and Business Solver.
Thank you. John Shanahan, President and CEO of Business Solver. Business Solver is a technology company that provides software and services to our clients and their employees. What we do is we help all of their employee benefits, elections, transactions, dollars get where they're supposed to go so the employees can get value out of those things that we call as employers benefits, employee benefits. And, we spend a lot of money on them. So what we do is really important because we're helping our clients and their employees get the value that they not only pay for, but deserve. And when we're talking about recruiting and retention, that's really important because it's a big part of your paycheck. And oftentimes people don't really get the value or don't understand how to get the value out of their benefits. And so that's our job and we love it. And
I love that.
We work hard at it every day.
And it's not a benefit if people don't use it, right? So I mean, it's nice that it's listed on the careers page, but if people aren't consuming it, adopting it, using it, etc., then it's not really a benefit.
It's not.
So do you help with just because I'm curious? Do you help with like communication strategies and helping people understand getting both from the benefits folks that kind of the wonky people that live in benefits admin? Do you help them with kind of the marketing and they're my friends, so I can talk like this. But do you help them with kind of it's more of the marketing side of things?
We've been on this journey from how to choose your benefits. So really, think about it like, we created like the TurboTax version for employees, just so you didn't have to be an expert. You just needed to know information about yourself and about your family and, a little bit on your health and how active you are. And so we just made it easy to select. And now we're really on this journey of moving from that how to choose to how to use. And along that,
very nice.
that path, there's all of that. Like, what's the best way to make, this more of a marketing effort? Because, benefits don't have the best user interface. If we put all these acronyms around them, we make it really tough to understand. We do different things at the state and federal level. So we have certainly over the last 2 years really ramped up our consumerism kind of efforts, which is really, kind of individual based marketing to help employees better understand their benefits and how to use them.
That's wonderful. Cause again, it's great that you have mental health professionals or access through an EAP, and that's a great benefit and your insurance covers it and all of that stuff. But if you don't know that, it's a big giant, so what? So thank God y'all are actually helping people with that. That's been a problem with for HR for a long time, as you well know. Let's jump into the trends. Let's go back to, here we are, 2021. What did you see? What are some of the trends that you saw?
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of compliance trends, for sure. So we had this funky thing called ARPA. We had different states wading into ACA. And then we had, to your point, we had this big, big challenge around kind of the virtualization of benefits. I mean, you probably remember that prior to the pandemic, it wasn't uncommon for employers to kind of host a benefits fair and have lots of providers and vendors right. and business all show up. And it was like a party, you know, annual enrollment's going to happen. Here's all the partners. You can ask them any questions. Well, you know, that pretty much was eliminated through 2020 and into 21 as we just completed or are completing another annual enrollment. And so this virtual, you know, benefits fairs, we started to pivot to everything virtual and really getting people more engaged with their mobile. And we also saw different employee behaviors around when they were wanting to think about their benefits and access their benefits. So good increase in adoption with our AI solution we call Sophia, good increase in our mobile adoption, and a very different kind of pattern around. I think the way I looked at it was from what the data showed us was people were busy with their life and their work all day long. Because, you know, we used to think, oh, employees will set things aside and they'll get thinking about their benefits between 9 and 5. And we definitely saw that shift out. So now more into the evening, I guess, when, you know, maybe you could finally get together and talk about it. We thought that trend would occur for a long, long time. It really was pushed forward through the pandemic. So looking at the benefits, kind of what we would call after hours. And so that puts more pressure on us to be better communicators after hours, provide other solutions through chat, through mobile, through AI. And I only think that's going to increase. And then, you know, we've got, you know, a continued desire by employers to cost shift and cost share. And what that means is moving to high deductible health plans and really wanting employees to be engaged and having some sort of, you know, alternative funding vehicle alongside like an HSA or an HRA. And I think those are trends that are here to stay and will continue to grow. And in some ways, I think it probably advanced the communication and the technology around benefits, you know, by a few years, pushed those curves faster because we had no other way to deal with it. We had to deal with some of these more advanced forms of technology.
I love that. Let me ask two questions around, one's around remote and the other is going to be around hybrid.
Sure. And
remote being, did you see anything in the data or your experience of kind of what, you know, what the employee population needs that might be different because of the pandemic, you know, from a remote perspective? And then we can, the hybrid is going to be a similar question. It's going to be, okay, you know, with some type of hybrid work model where we have some employees coming in, some employees never coming in, and then some type of mixture of flex in the middle. You know, do we need to think about it, or did you see in 2021 that as people are doing some type of hybrid model that they needed to do different things with benefits?
Yeah, I think, you know, we continue to have our client annual events. We just did it virtually. And, you know, we do our empathy study. We've been doing an empathy study with Edelman, our marketing firm and partner for quite a while here now. And we saw some big changes in the data. And we also experienced them as an employer. And, you know, what I said to our clients, when I talked to them in May of this year, I said, you know, not everybody can go, you know, into a hybrid mode. Not everybody can go into a completely virtual home short mode. I can just speak to you what we see in our empathy study and what we've experienced as an employer. So it's, you know, through that lens, I'll answer your question. What we saw in our own employee population is that our solvers, our employees felt like they could be very productive working remotely. Like 97% said they were fine working remotely. They felt, you know, safe working remotely, and it was the flexibility they needed to have. And, you know, they rewarded us with, you know, the same or higher levels of quality. And, you know, we pulse our employees. And what that means is we ask them to rate themselves on a color scale, just like our employees. So blue is, you know, you're in a super good spot. Green, you're in a really good spot. You know, yellow, there's something wonky and your supervisor needs to check in with you. And red, you know, it's a full on, you know, alert. And we had 94% of our employees all through 21 and for large portions of 20 reporting, you know, blue or green. So it's a really, you know, it worked for us. I think our empathy study showed that one of the most important things that employees wanted was flexibility in their work arrangement. And those were really high scores. When you asked them in the past, when we asked them, you know, what's the most important benefit an employer can provide? You know, in the first few years of this study, we would get things like better mental health benefits.
Right. You know, lower deductible.
Lower cost, ancillary. Yeah. We'd get all that kind of typical.
Add insurance, you know, things that we laugh about now, clearly, but back then they were critical. I mean, absolutely critical.
And we've made progress in some of those domains. I mean, there are a wider range of cooler benefits coming to meet more age groups, but by far and away, you know, coming out of that 2020 and 2021 empathy study, what you saw is this shift to, hey, you're gonna give me flexibility in my work arrangement, where I work, when I work, how I work, and that is a huge benefit to me. And
that tracks for me because it also tracks to resignations. You know, if you're not going to give me flexibility, I'm going to go get flexibility. Someone will give me flexibility. And so again, it's a kind of a adopter or perish. And so I think that's made leadership kind of look at benefits in a different way, look at flexibility in a much different way. I love that you've got the lens of being able to see kind of how an employee population changes and then what leaders need to do to change with them.
Yes. Yeah, it's critical. I mean, if you want to avoid, what I said at the time is to our clients, if you have the flexibility to do it and you want to be an employer of choice, you have to do this.
Right.
By the time you've figured out that your turnover, is starting to creep, it's too late. You got to be out in front of this. And I said, I'll speak to any CEO, I'll speak to any, HR team, but I just firmly believe we've got the data to show to you because we're monitoring and talking and surveying our employees to show you that, with key initiatives like what we call Workspace Anywhere and our Peak program, and then My Time, which is just a pivot on time away from work.
Right.
Those are key things that we did to make sure we're out in front of it. And I think it's really paid off for us.
Is My Time in the way that y'all think about it or the way that you help your customers think about it, is that not forced, but is it you're really not required to take it, but you're really encouraged to take My Time? Because that unlimited PTO thing, we could probably spend an hour talking about unlimited PTO, go back and forth on that, but we won't do that. However, I love the My Time. It brought up the question of, okay, well, how do you facilitate folks not feeling guilty?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a real problem, right? A lot of employers have adopted it and found that they don't. I think we had a specific objective in calling it My Time to really tell people they're in control of it. It's theirs, they need to use it. And we were encouraging some flexible language around it. Of course, on the other side of that always is, you've got to get your work done, but we want to make sure that you are taking time off. And I think we do monitor it to make sure that we're not seeing unhealthy patterns of people just not taking time away. Or, what we also focus on is not, ever just really taking time off, right? If you take a 2-week vacation, but you're monitoring your email every single day, then you probably didn't get the respite you needed. So it's a balanced conversation around, yes, this is your time, you need to take it, but you really need to have clear time away from work so that you can, you can disengage and really focus on your life, your family, et cetera.
Yeah. And for the leaders, you brought it back to productivity, which I really like. It's like, this is a game of productivity. Let's not make any mistakes about it. We want, desire, need our employees to be productive, and they want to be productive. Yes. So like everybody wins here. It's just, it's a calibration. How do you calibrate it to make sure that they do those things? Well, let's flip over to predictions. Let's see. We'll pull out the crystal ball. Because again, you're at the end of the season. I guess, what is it? July 1st and December 31st are your two critical dates and benefits. So what are you looking at for 2022?
Well, I don't think what we would say looking on the, the RFP side of the world, we're not back to normal yet. I think, this uncertainty in the, last quarter has made it difficult for people to budget and to know how to think about where they're going into the future. So the high line, we're not through this yet. And we still have, some, I think, probably difficult periods to get through here over the next, 4, 5, 6 months as we go through the winter. And you can see that show up in some uncertainty in the buying side of things. I think, just general on the healthcare side of things, the backlog is real and it's difficult, and it's going to, we're going to have medical inflation because, just like we've had supply and demand, supply chain problems everywhere else we look around, we've definitely got it going on in the healthcare arena. So I think that's going to increase costs in general, which again, I think will put a burden on cost shifting and cost sharing for employees and employers. I think, if you step back from it and you say, okay, well, if we've got those macro things going on, then what does it mean? What it means to me is, and to us as a business, is you will need to be on the highest performing kind of benefits technology software and really work with your provider, because coming out of this, then if your costs are going up, employers will then be trying to figure out, well, what changes can I make in my benefit program? And how can I do that? And you have to have a nimble technology to do that. We saw a bit of it in 21. I think we'll see a lot more of it in 22. And then, I don't know if it's the final one, but, for me, I think another big one is, I think with, millennials on down, and in particular millennials being the largest working population, I just see a different way of going about procuring benefits, how they think about benefits.
Right.
And with, generations now, kind of straddling everything from, I'm just getting into having children or having life events to people exiting it, because you still have, the second largest working population looking to retire. I think the pressure on having a more diverse benefit program for a lot of reasons, not just generationally, geographic is another big driver in there, but then, there's other drivers. That pressure is large and growing. And I think there's going to be pressure on the benefits decision makers, the younger benefits decision makers coming in on how do I attack this? It used to be, it was kind of one benefits program worked for everybody. It's really not true anymore. And there's just so many great options that your benefits shelf is going to be huge. I think it's going to be big. It'll be significant.
Do you foresee a world where it's just highly personalized, super highly personalized for that person and that person's family, et cetera, where there's just an amount of what the company will put towards benefits and then use whatever you want, use them in any array that you want that makes sense for you and your family? Again, I've got some friends in their 20s and they're super healthy. And so they look at health insurance and like, I might go to the doctor in the next 2 or 3 years. It's just a different mentality. I can, again, I was like that in my 20s. So I get it. However, when you have kids, you think about, really it's them being sick all the time. And so things, your priorities change, but the question of just getting people over that, cause you started off with the cookie cutter, which we all kind of grew up with, like, okay, benefits, everyone's got them all. There you go. Have fun. Do you see a world where that we just throw the cookie cutter completely out and just like, okay, Here's it isn't a fixed or finite, the amount of money that the company can contribute is finite, but outside of that, pick what you want.
I think there's going to be a period, you know, if you think about it, just like stepping back from a business solver perspective, just, you know, with, mm-hmm. you know, call it, you know, 1400 employees, you know, pre-pandemic, we were very focused on call it 7-ish office locations.
Right.
And, you know, that probably reduced our footprint to, you know, maybe 25 states or something like that, because we had a view that while we had remote employees, we probably only had 20-25% of our population that was remote. And now we sit at something like 46-47 states, and you just have to look through a different lens and just start with the easy one, healthcare. Got all kinds of network considerations, and how does your program work if your employees in, you know, Redmond, Washington, or in Boca, you know, Raton, Florida. And it just, you know, grows from there. And so I think the first thing is that the pressure, you know, from a recruiting perspective, it's great. And from a D&I and driving diversity in your organization, it's great, you know, and it really helped us on those initiatives to move more quickly. But it does put inherent pressure on having the right benefit program for right. where everybody works and lives and meeting all those different needs. And so what I think happens is, you know, we make benefits hard between group and individual.
Right.
So getting highly customized would mean you could go down an individual route. It's pretty still, I'll just say difficult because of, you know, how the states weigh in on all of those plans. And, you know, it's just still significantly difficult. But right. I do see an increased number of benefits and types of benefits that meet different challenges and needs. And, you know, we just put in a benefit as an example for employees that are struggling to find care for, you know, for their dependents that have special needs.
Whether oh, cool. that's
elder care, you know, yeah. dependent care. And it's a real problem, you know, for folks that, you know, are approaching, you know, their 50s and they've got parents that start to have issues, and it becomes a big burden for them. And so, you know, that's a benefit we adapted in there. You're right. A lot of people have EAP, but the mental health benefits, the customization on that, the exposure on that's been awesome. So I think it's going to be, you're going to get more and more personalized,
right?
Because of the sheer kind of awareness that there are gaps in our benefit programs, and we need to continue to build those out.
It's funny because I've seen an uptick in fertility benefits.
Yep. Yep.
The desire for fertility benefits. You mentioned cost, and I've had to explain to employees cost around benefits, and it's not easy. It's like trigonometry when you try to explain healthcare costs. And every year it seems to go up. Yeah, got it. Totally understand. But you know, I want to kind of dig into that for just a second, because
sure.
COVID and a lot of the kind of surgeries that got postponed and pushed back, and also healthcare being very hard to staff right now. I mean, extremely yep. difficult to staff, both on the hourly side and non-hourly side. It's very difficult to staff. Do you believe, you know, that? I mean, when you explain that, and do you help your customers explain when they have to go through that cost discussion? Because it's important, because, yeah. you know, it is going to cost more. Even if you just get the exact same stuff, you have the exact yeah. same plan from last year, you know,
yeah.
carrier aside, you have the exact same stuff. Yeah, it's going to be more. That yeah. just is. Now, how do we explain that? How do you explain that? And how do you help your customers explain that?
Yeah, it's difficult, and it's often not a short-term thing, right? Like, you may make adjustments, you know, like we made adjustments in our plan because we saw, you know, that, you know, we had issues with our provider being aggressive and helpful in case management and network management and provider management. And so we made a short-term move for a longer-term gain and better outcomes for our employees. But they don't feel that immediately. And in fact, your costs can go up before they come down. I think it's a choice, right? And I think this is going to be a hard one given where we sit right now.
Right.
I think employers will have the desire to want to cost share and pass on costs, but I think there'll be extreme pressure on them not passing that those costs along.
That's right. Because it'll come up in the form of retention.
Right. It'll come up in the form of my paycheck's smaller. Well, I don't care. I'll just go to, you know, another employer group where, you know, it doesn't cost as much. So I think that conversation for right now is on, in my mind, is probably on pause.
Right.
Because you're looking at it and saying, well, I can't pass that along, or it's going to affect my retention. I think that actually the better conversation, if you can afford not to pass along right now, the better conversation is to say, is your benefit program aligned with your employee needs?
Right.
So are you under or overspending? And if so, where and why? You know, I see this all the time with part-time populations. You know, I've got 10,000 employees that are full-time and 4,000 employees that are part-time, but I've got 100% turnover on the 4,000 employees. Well, it's like, well, are you offering any benefits? Yeah. Even if it's a limited benefit, you know, are you doing anything to curve the retention curve? And so I think the better conversation we're having with clients is, if you want to manage your turnover and your retention, how are you getting value out of your benefit program? And is that value understood? And are they experiencing it? And the experiencing it part of it is really important, because you can see in the data where you should have claims. And if they're not, the employees are not claiming their benefits, you know, using their benefits, then you need to help and focus on that as well. And I think that's where the trend goes. I think being able to easily cost shift and cost share, it's not like it was 3 years ago, 5 years ago. It's going to be tougher.
Yeah. And again, it's, we come full circle back to usage. You know, if you right size your benefits for your employee population, you meet their needs, maybe even exceed their needs, and you've communicated it well, and they use those benefits, your cost is pennies compared to your retention cost. So, but it's all assumptive, and in that you've right-sized it, you've communicated, they're using it, et cetera. So, John, thank you so much for carving out time in your day. I know you got a million, jillion things going on, and just, I really appreciate you breaking things down and educating us.
No, it was fun. Glad to do it, and really appreciate the time and the questions. So,
we'll do it again next year, so we can go back and look at 22 and see what we got right or wrong, and do 23. But thank you again, and thanks for everyone listening to the Recruiting Daily Podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Recruiting Live Podcast by Recruiting Daily. Check out the latest industry podcasts, webinars, articles, and news at recruitingdaily.com.